Hello and welcome to the Farming Advice Service podcast. I'm Laura Harpham and today we'll be talking about the latest sustainable farming incentive announcements with Amelia Rome, a farm business consultant at the Anderson Centre. Farming Advice Service and the Future Farm Resilience Fund delivered a series of four webinars on sustainable farming incentive. It's a bit of a mouthful, so we'll refer to it as SFI from now on. We talked about the various options for different farming systems in September, and Amelia kindly hosted those with us. And she's joined us today to give us a quick overview. So it's not quite as detailed as the webinars, but we'll give you a flavour of what's been announced, what the options are, and how you might want to approach considering those. But before we get into that, Amelia, could you give us a brief intro to yourself, please, and your role within the Anderson Centre?
Of course. Thank you, Laura. Hello, everyone. My name's Amelia Rome. I'm a farm business consultant at the Anderson Centre. We have two teams. We have a farm business consultancy team and a research team. And we essentially cover any agricultural sector within the UK.
Brilliant. And I understand that a fair amount of what you do is talking to people about the various complexities of announcements, grant funding and other schemes that are available. And we had the initial rollout, I think it's okay to call that, of the SFI for this year with a number of new options. We're going to go through the options in a little bit of detail in a moment, but can you just give us a quick overview of what that announcement involved, please?
So, yes, so we did have an announcement that we were having essentially a controlled rollout of the new 2023 SFI scheme and what the future of a current 2022 SFI scheme was going to look like. We do have more clarity on this now, and we know that those 2022 SFI schemes are going to come to an end on their annual anniversary, if not before. The SFI 2023, which is what we can apply for now, albeit in a controlled rollout, which we'll touch on a bit later in the podcast, but essentially that one is here to stay. They're going to keep adding options and standards to this new scheme as we go yearly, so you'll be able to build quite a comprehensive scheme over a couple of years.
Fantastic. And yes, thank you for touching on the last year's scheme and the pilot, because it seems from conversations with DEFRA that they've been quite receptive to people's comments about changes and what works and what didn't. I know there was plenty of discussion both at the initial kind of inception stage at SFI, but also during the pilot of a need for flexibility so people could select the options that worked best for their farm business. Am I right in thinking the initial stages involved, oh, we didn't call them packages, what was the word they used?
Standards.
Standards. So we had, thank you.
Yes, we had our essentially our intermediate, advanced and introductory, that's it, introductory standards. So it was a basic and then you kept leveling up, as it were. Now though that level of standards we don't have anymore, but it's still the SFI. We still have a similar structure of standards, albeit they're not different levels.
Right, brilliant. And the latest announcement included a number of different options, which are the equivalent of actions, I suppose, in other agri-environment schemes, and they were grouped into a few broad headings. Could you give us a bit of a run through on those, please?
So yes, the new scheme, new SFI scheme, is that there are a number of standards, and under each topic slash standard, there are a number of actions which are tailored to help you achieve the aim of the overall standard. So to begin with, we have a number of actions for soils, which is farmland soil standard. You have actions for moorland, so the moorland standard. You have the actions for hedgerows and actions for things like integrated pest management, nutrient management. We also have farmland wildlife on arable land and farmland wildlife on improved grassland. There are also buffer strips, low input grassland. Gosh, I could go on for quite a while. But what we are essentially also expecting is a number of different actions, as it were, to be announced in an announcement from DEFRA this autumn. So autumn 23, we're due a 2024 SFI announcement. I'm expecting this to include actions that will cover things such as organic standards, direct drilling / no-till standards, agroforestry, rivers and streams, and things like that.
Fantastic. So hopefully something for everyone. I think that's the aim.
That is the aim. The aim is that this scheme will mean that there will be something at least for everyone. At the minute, it's not quite there yet, but I think as they keep building the scheme and adding more bits in, it is designed to be flexible, then hopefully over the next few years, it will be quite a comprehensive scheme.
Fantastic. Okay. Given that, obviously, we don't have time or capacity to run through every single option and standard within this podcast. Most of them, I think it's fair to say, were covered in the webinar series that we did in September. So I will include a link to those recordings. The recordings are available to watch back on both the FAS and the Future Farm Resilience Fund web pages. So if you look underneath, however you're accessing this podcast, the podcast description will have those links. But could you give us a bit of a taste, maybe pull out a few examples of ones? Realistically, people are going to want to know, what are the payment rates and what are the eligibility requirements? How do I know whether I can put this option into my agreement?
Of course. So I think I'll start off at the very beginning of the SFI with the first standard that there is, which is the soil standard. We have three actions or options, whatever you'd like to call them, underneath the soil standard. And I'm going to run through those because I think these are quite exciting for some people. So to begin with, we have SAM 1. So this is your completing a soil management plan, which includes assessing your soil and testing for soil organic matter. Now, this option is static and it is available on all arable land, permanent pasture and permanent crops. And permanent crops include both horticultural and non-horticultural crops. This pays £5.80 per hectare plus £95 each year for the year that you're in the agreement. And what it requires is it requires that your soil test includes an organic matter test. So under GAIC, as farmers, we are required to rotationally test our soils anyway, our soil indices anyway, every so many years. So this option, essentially, if you also include an organic matter test within that, then this option is essentially helping you to cover the cost of your soil tests. Going on to SAM 2, the second soil standard option / action. This is establish and maintain a multi-species winter cover crop. This option is rotational and it pays you £129 per hectare. This option is available on all arable land and horticultural permanent crops. And generally, this option to classify as a multi-species winter cover crop, it does have to be at least two species of either a brassica, a legume, a grass or a cereal, and a herb. The winter cover crop does have to be present from December through to February, though. But it can be destroyed before the end of February if you need to establish an early sown spring crop. Moving on to the third soil standard / action, and this is establish and maintain a herbal lay. This option is also rotational and it pays £382 per hectare. This option is available on all arable land and also improved permanent grassland. And the herbal lay, because it's a multi-species herbal lay, it does have to contain a mixture of grasses, legumes and herbs. If you do, however, already have existing herbal lays across your farm, you can maintain those herbal lays and be paid for them under the SFI scheme.
I beg your pardon. I just want to jump in because I'm wondering if everybody who's listening will know the difference between static and rotational option. Could you just clarify that for me, please?
Of course. Good point. Very good point. So a static option under the SFI, once you apply for a static option on an area of land, it must stay there for the duration of your agreement. Now, the SFI agreement The duration of these will be 3 years. So once you decide where you're going to put it, it must stay there. Whereas rotational options, you can say, I want to put in your application, you say, in this field, I want 10 hectares of this rotational option. And then in the following year, you can move that 10 hectares to a different field parcel. So that can rotate around your farm annually. What is important to consider with the rotational options, however, is that the area of these can vary by up to 50% of what you applied for.
Oh, interesting. So, okay.
Well, this is quite a good one. So the idea is that field rotations vary and field sizes vary. So if you say you're going to have 10 hectares of a rotational option, you might not be able to have 10 hectares the following year because of field sizes and rotations. But however, what I think this does is it gives you a little bit of wiggle room if something doesn't go completely to plan. So, for example, you can apply for 10 hectares of a rotational option in year one when you apply. In year two, you might only have 5 hectares. That is okay because it's 50% of what you applied for. And then in year three, you can go back up to your 10 hectares. Or if you like, annually, you can add in more area if you so wish.
Brilliant. Okay. So yes, I can already see that there is more flexibility, both in terms of the choices as you go in and the choices as you go along, both in terms of adding things in, taking things out. And am I right in thinking the guidance in the handbook is very much guidance rather than instruction? I've had a look through and it seems like it's mostly, as long as you're achieving the objectives of the option in terms of whatever it might be, soil health or water quality or wildlife and habitat conservation, as long as that box is ticked, you as a farmer or land manager have essentially the freedom to do it in the best way that works for your farm business.
You are correct there, Laura, yes. So in the guidance handbook for the Sustainable Farming Incentive, there it does give you an idea of how to complete and achieve each action. It says it does still state things that you must not do, but there's not a very long list of things that you can't do under each option. And it does state generally where you have to do that option and how they would like you to achieve it, but it's not prescriptive. So previously with countryside stewardship, it's been exceptionally prescriptive, saying you must have this, 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 and this. With the SFI, it's not. It does state it's up to you how you achieve that action as long as you achieve the aims. And the aim of each action will be that first sentence under each action under the SFI handbook, or if you're looking at it online. There is some guidance if you're very confused and you really do not know how you're going to do a certain action. The RPA have issued some guidance for all of the standards stating examples. Now, this guidance is voluntary. It states examples of how, for example, you might establish a herbal lay. You don't have to do it that way as long as you achieve the action of the option.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I'm conscious that I jumped in when you were talking about the soil management options. Are there others that you'd like to flag up to us?
I think the soil management options will be in some shape or form applicable to nearly everyone, especially SAM 1 soil testing. It's almost a no-brainer. I'm not going to touch on moorland options in too much detail because it is very niche, and also the moorland option, there are more moorland options available under countryside stewardship than the SFI. Yeah. I'm going to quickly touch on hedgerow options because there aren't many farms across the country that don't have hedgerows. I do want to make the point, though, with the hedgerow standard, is that if your hedges are not mapped on the RPA land viewer, then that is okay. Previously, with countryside stewardship, if you want to have a hedgerow option, your hedges had to be mapped, which meant in some cases doing whole farm RLE 1 forms, mapping every single metre of hedge, which frankly took hours and it wasn't the best use of time. With the hedgerow options under the SFI, however, If you apply for a certain metre of hedgerow and your hedges aren't mapped, then the RPA will trust you that if you're applying for a hedgerow option, then there is indeed a hedge there. There are three hedgerow options under the hedgerow standard for the SFI scheme. The first hedgerow option, HRW1, is static. So once you enter a length of hedge into this option, it is then there for 3 years of your agreement. And this pays, HRW1 pays £3 per 100 metres for one side of the hedge. So it's £6 per 100 metres for both sides. And it pays you to assess and record the condition of your hedge. Now you can do this on a map or you can do this in a spreadsheet, but you're just highlighting areas where the hedge might be dead, where there's a lot of elder, where it might need coppicing, where it might need laying, etc., etc. The second hedgerow standard slash option is HRW2. This pays £10 per 100 metres for one side of the hedge. So it's £20 per 100 metres where you have both sides. This option, again, is static. And the title of this option is to manage your hedge for a range of heights and widths. Now, under this option, essentially, it's BE3 in disguise, if you are familiar with countryside stewardship option codes. But what this option under the SFI is that you can essentially cut your hedges one in two or after Christmas in the second year rotationally. So there isn't as much one in three cutting where there is a lot of woody growth and it smashes the hedge. Moving on to HRW3, again, a static option. Once you enter a length of hedge, it's in. This pays £10 per 100 metres for both sides of the hedge. And this option is hedgerow trees, and it's paying you to have, on average, at least one tree per 100 metres of length of hedge. So if you have lots of trees in your hedgerows, you may as well get paid for them. If you don't, this option will expect you to, under it, establish trees. So you have at least one every 100 metres. But if you have to establish a lot of trees, then I suggest that maybe this option isn't for you, because the payment rate won't cover establishing trees if you have none at all.
Okay, so in that instance, it's either hedgerows that already have trees or hedgerows that have the capacity to allow some of the plants already there to develop into tree growth.
Into trees, or you can plant them. But if you have to plant a lot of trees just to meet this standard, I'd suggest maybe going for a capital option through the capital grant scheme to plant trees.
Sure. Which brings me very nicely onto my next question. Thank you. And we know from the webinar Q&As as well, lots of people had questions about how SFI interacts with other schemes, and particularly if people are already in countryside stewardship or a legacy ELS or HLS agreement, can they apply for SFI options at the same time?
Yes, you can. If you're in a countryside stewardship agreement, there is nothing stopping you from applying for a sustainable farming incentive agreement. In the handbook and on the online guidance, under each option, there will be a table, and that table states exactly what countryside stewardship and environmental stewardship, so if you're still in ELS or HLS, it will state exactly which options under those schemes are compatible with that SFI option. So it's very black and white. You'll be able to tell very easily what options you can layer on top of countryside stewardship. When you come to apply for the SFI and you have an existing countryside stewardship agreement, if you have, for example, whole field countryside stewardship options and you're trying to put an incompatible SFI option on that parcel, the application won't allow you to. So it will come up with a red error message basically saying that there's not enough room because there's either environmental or countryside stewardship options already there and the two aren't compatible. So yes, I do want to also just make a note that there are some SFI options and countryside stewardship options that are almost one and the same. SFI is more flexible, but you won't be able to be paid, for example, for a GS4 under countryside stewardship at the same time as SAM 3 under countryside stewardship, under the SFI, sorry, because GS4 and SAM 3 are basically paying you to do the same thing twice at the same time.
I see. Okay. So that makes sense in terms of public money for public goods and all of the those rules. If I am a farmer who is in an agreement and the SFI looks better for me, either from a flexibility or a payment rates perspective, but let's say I've got another year to run on an existing agreement, what are my options?
So if you're in a very comprehensive countryside stewardship scheme and you find that it's not really working for you and you do have a year or so left to run on it, you can contact the RPA. There is on the RPA's website a form called the Intention to Move form. And this form, if you fill it out, it does say it's expired back in August, but the RPA will still have the conversation with you. You can fill it out. You essentially fill in your countryside stewardship agreement number, and you're basically asking them if you can leave your countryside stewardship in favour of going into the SFI. Now, you will be able to leave countryside stewardship to go into the SFI if you can demonstrate that you are environmentally better off in the SFI. So if your SFI scheme is going to deliver more, cover more area, you're going to do more options than you did under countryside stewardship, then you can leave. You can come out of stewardship to go into the SFI. You just need to ask the RPA and they will get the ball rolling. What they will do is your countryside stewardship scheme, they will let it run for a calendar year. So your stewardship scheme won't end midway through the year. It won't end in May or September. They will run that through to the end of December because it's nice and tidy for them. They'll just continue to pay you your annual claim, what you do with countryside stewardship. And then from the 1st of January, your farm and your parcels will be free to enter into a more comprehensive SFI scheme.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you. And that's new information to me, actually, in terms of the fact that if you're leaving one scheme, the new scheme that you're proposing to enter needs to have more benefits, essentially, from an environmental perspective. So that's useful to know as well. Okay, so I'm conscious that there are, as you've mentioned, a whole range of options and management actions that we don't have time to cover in detail here, but those are all covered in the guidebook, as well as I think we covered most of them in the webinars last month as well, didn't we?
Yes. So,
links are there in the bottom of the podcast. Like to just move on, if we may, into hopefully people are thinking, oh, this seems like a good option. What are my next steps and how to submit an expression of interest and then hopefully move on to the application stage? Could you give us a run through of that, please?
Of course. Wonderful. So because we're still in that controlled rollout phase of the SFI, you can't just log onto your RPA account and apply straight away. You have to, at the moment, submit an expression of interest. So there are two ways in which you can submit an expression of interest. You can email the RPA on their RPA email address, the one that we send supporting evidence and RLE1 forms to. And you can basically state in the email subject heading SFI-apply-early and then followed by your single business identifier. And in the email, just say that, say your business name, say your SBI, and say that you want to apply for the SFI early, and that they will take that as a submission, an expression of interest. Alternatively, you can fill out the expression of interest form. And again, you can do this in two ways. You can log on to your rural payments account. You can scroll down to where it says sustainable farming incentive, click where it says sustainable farming incentive, and then it will take you through to SFI applications and agreements. There will be a green button there that says apply for SFI actions. If you press that and you haven't yet submitted an expression of interest and you haven't been notified by the RPA that they're ready for your application, something very exciting will happen. It will say that your application is creating and you'll think, brilliant, I've skipped the queue. But it will come up with a red error message after a few moments, basically saying that they're not ready for you to apply for the SFI yet, and please submit an expression of interest. It then shows you a link for the expression of interest, and you can open that up. You can also search for the expression of interest link on the RPA website. So if you just type in SFI expression of interest, it will come up with a link. It opens in a separate web browser. It's all on one page, and you scroll down and you need to enter your SBI. And then it asks you what actions you're considering to apply for. It's all tick boxes. Do not worry if you don't tick something at this stage. It's not the be-all and end-all. They're just gauging interest. So if you don't tick a standard or an action at this stage, it's not going to be barred from your application. You then move down and it asks you how much land you manage. And there's three options, but please don't be caught out. It's not in hectares. The area of land it's asking if you manage is land parcels. If you're unsure of how many land parcels you have, pop back to your rural payments login, go back to Land Viewer where it brings up your RPA maps, and just there it will tell you the number of land parcels that you have. It then asks if you have to do any mapping prior to starting or submitting an SFI application. So if you have any land covers that need altering, field boundaries that need altering, and you need to submit an RE1 form, you will have to do this before you start your SFI application. The reason for this is because once you generate an application, it sets your maps. So if you generate an application, then submit an RE1 form, that mapping change won't go through to your SFI application. So do all your mapping changes before generating an SFI application. Otherwise, you'll get halfway through an application, you'll have to realise that the mapping's wrong, you'll have to withdraw and start again, and it's a waste of time. Then, if you scroll down, you'll see that it asks what type of change is required. So if you do have to submit an RLE1 form to do a boundary change or a land cover change, it does ask you what that is. If you don't have to change anything, just click Other. Otherwise, you won't be able to submit your expression of interest. It doesn't like a section not ticked. Scrolling down again, it does then ask you if you're currently in any other agri-environment schemes. And it gives you four options here. It gives you an option for countryside stewardship mid-tier, a separate option for countryside stewardship higher tier. It asks if you're in an environmental stewardship scheme, so this includes ELS and HLS schemes. And then it does ask if you are in an SFI pilot scheme or an SFI 2022. If you're not in any other agri-environment schemes, then don't worry about clicking anything. Scrolling down again, it asks if you're a tenant farmer, an owner, or mixed. And then the last question of the expression of interest form is, what type of farm do you operate? Gives you a number of options here, such as grazing livestock, dairy, cereals, horticultural, or mixed. At the very bottom, there's a blue arrow. If you tick that, it basically says, thank you very much for submitting your expression of interest, and the RPA will be in contact with you when they are ready for you to submit your full application.
Brilliant. Okay. So thank you for talking us through in detail. It probably is quicker to actually do than to talk through, I suspect, when you have got
it. Definitely
it
is.
Yeah. And you've got that.
It definitely is, Laura.
Steph. And so your expression of interest goes off and they come back to you and say, okay, we're ready for you. Please submit your application. Again, I know that we can't necessarily go through every three single step, but what extra information might people need to have to hand for their application, for example, that they wouldn't necessarily have to hand for the expression of interest?
So when you actually come to submit your application, in terms of extra information that you might need, the SFI application is all online and it's through Rural Payments. So it might be handy to have a farm map to hand with your field parcel numbers, your RPA field parcel numbers on, just so you know, as you work through your application, it's in field parcel number order. There is a map accompanying the SFI application window, and it does highlight which field each field parcel is as you hover over. if you've printed off a map beforehand and you've scribbled on it which options you want where when you apply, it will be much easier and much quicker for you rather than having to go back and forth constantly trying to figure out which field you're in. It might also be good just to sit down and think which options you want where and then have a list of which options you're applying for in total. When you do your application, it will ask you which SFI actions you want to do, and you go down the list and tick all the ones you want to do, and then you go and apply them onto each field parcel. If you do forget to tick one, you can go back and re-tick it, but it's just good to have a list there just to make sure you don't forget anything.
Okay.
But apart from that, it's fairly straightforward.
Brilliant. Okay, brilliant. So in advance of, I mean, you might even have done that in advance of your expression of interest, potentially had a look at your farm map, worked out what you've got where your existing options are under existing stewardship, and where you might want to introduce new things and annotate. And it's possible to do that on various different software as well as a physical printout copy. And then you can use that for your application. Do we know yet what the timelines are looking like in terms of how long it takes to consider an application? I think I remember that you apply for a start date, which is the beginning of the following month. Is that correct?
So when you read the guidance, from the point of application, you should have an agreement offer within 3 months. But we are seeing where people have submitted an expression of interest and applied in September, their agreements have started and they have received their accelerated first quarterly payment already. So generally it has been quite quick. So yes, from the point of applying, from the point of you submitting your application, you should have an agreement offer within 3 months. It may be a month, it may be 2 weeks, it might be 2.5 months. It depends on the number of applications at that time and also the complexity potentially of your application. You then have to accept your agreement offer. So you have to sign a declaration and send it back off. And then from the point of you accepting your agreement offer, your agreement will start on the first day of the following month. So there'll be no SFI agreements that start midway through a month, no start on the 10th, 20th, etc. They will all start on the first of a month. And then from that point, you will receive your first accelerated quarterly payment within that first month, and then quarterly after that. Your final quarterly payment, so your fourth quarterly payment of the year, will be subject to you doing an annual declaration. This annual declaration, you'll do it within the month coming up to the annual anniversary of this agreement. We don't know what the annual declaration is going to explicitly look like because nobody's got to that point yet. Even with a 2022 SFI scheme, they've all ended before needing to do an annual declaration. But it's likely to be quite simple, tick box saying, yes, I've done everything I've said I was going to do. If you haven't done anything, you need to tell the RPA. If you, for whatever reason, haven't managed to do a area of herbal lay or an area of cover crop, you must tell them and they will adjust your final quarterly payment just to take into account what you haven't done. You won't receive any penalties, but it's important to remember that you must try and do what you apply for and what you say you're going to do. Don't apply for lots of things and then don't do them. You must try and do what you apply for. On this annual declaration, at this annual anniversary of your agreements, it's also possible to add in more options and add in more land. So if you've started off with a very small scheme because you're a bit nervous about how it's going to run, and you have, for example, one option on one field on 1 hectare, at this point you can add in more bits, and you can add in more bits every year, but your agreement will still only run 3 years from the start date, so it won't keep rolling over as you add bits in. So there are, as it's also worth mentioning, that there's no penalties with the SFI. If you haven't done something, you just won't be paying for what you haven't done.
Fair enough. So yes, more of a kind of business contractual arrangement, I suppose. Appreciate contracts can include penalty clauses, but in this instance it's a more collaborative approach, I suppose, to environmental management.
Yes. It's mainly because that the SFI is the first entirely domestic agricultural scheme we've had since going into the European Union. Mm-hmm. Most of our environmental schemes have been European driven. Countryside Stewardship, before it was domestic, was European driven. This is the first scheme that is domestic completely. So they are working more towards, they're moving away from that penalty driven, penalty motivated scheme where you're scared not to do something because you're going to get a penalty, to more of a trust basis. The RPA wants to trust farmers and the RPA wants farmers to trust them going forward. It's more of a collaborative working together relationship rather than one-sided.
Fantastic. Okay, well, hopefully everything that we've covered in the last half an hour or so is making people think this might work for me. Before I do my little closing bit, is there anything else you as a farm business advisor think people might need to either be aware of or be thinking about in relation to an SFI application?
Just have a look at what your farming system currently is and what you are currently doing day to day in your farming system. And then have a look at what the SFI has on offer. Go online, look at the handbook and just think, well, the best way to design an SFI scheme that fits a farming system is to ensure that the SFI fits around the farming. The moment your farming system has to fit around an SFI scheme, it will become quite expensive to administer and expensive to run, and it will incur more cost and it will just drive down that margin. I also just want to mention that potentially for some farms, the SFI is going to be quite a significant income stream. Therefore, treat it with the attention that it deserves. Treat it like any other income stream that your farming business receives. Do what is required of you under the SFI. It's exceptionally flexible, but just do it, because it could be quite significant income-wise if you haven't done something. If you are unsure on what to do with the SFI and you find the guidance too broad and not prescriptive enough, there is a lot of information out there on the SFI. Apart from the handbook, the SFI, it's well worth subscribing to the RPA's blog. And they do articles on various SFI options quite regularly, which does shed some light. They also cover things like definitions on improved and unimproved grassland, because some people are unsure of their grassland, which camp their grassland falls into. Again, if you are confused, it's well worth a listen to some of our SFI webinars that we've done with the Farming Advice Service previously. And there is, again, some voluntary guidance available on the RPA website, which does cover each standard and the actions under that standard. It just gives you a bit more of an idea of how you can complete some of the actions. So, yes, just have a look at it. Don't be afraid of it. It's quite a comprehensive scheme and it makes farming sense. It fits a bit more rotationally and it just fits farming systems a bit better than any scheme we've seen before.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you, Amelia, for your time today. And thank you to you, the listeners. In terms of other things that you might want to check out if you've enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, we have another couple of podcasts in the series talking about the Future Farm Resilience Fund from a couple of different providers. So they offer one-to-one business advice, which can include a conversation about SFI as a potential income source. And we also have the webinars that we've mentioned, as well as a number of others on relevant topics on the FAS website. Should also say thank you to DEFRA, who fund the Farming Advice Service and the Future Farm Resilience Fund, to help farms in England understand and meet the requirements of cross-compliance, basic payment scheme and other relevant UK and EU policies. You can watch the SFI webinar recordings on our website, farmingadviceservice.org.uk, as well as accessing information on FAS events, other webinars, technical articles and online resources. And we do also have an online training module with free basis points attached. And the podcast and newsletter team always welcome feedback and suggestions on what else you would like us to cover. So please email us at advice@farmingadviceservice.org.uk or send us a tweet at DEFRAFAS. And finally, if you'd like to keep up to date with future podcasts, events and news from the Farming Advice Service, you can sign up to our monthly newsletter, which is packed full of timely nudges and relevant advice. And the link is on the website again, farmingadviceservice.org.uk. Thank you. Bye-bye.